From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we're well into our 22nd year on the air. Gabe, is that believable? My goodness gracious. And thanks to all the people who have helped us along the way, all our wonderful underwriters, all the wonderful, wonderful guests we've had. What a joy to meet so many people over, I guess, not just hundreds, but in the thousands now. And, of course, you, the listeners, who have made it all possible. It was Bishop Emeritus Wiegand's vision and carried on and with great support by Bishop Soto. So we were just so pleased to be a part of Catholic broadcasting here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, speaking of things we're pleased with, I have in my hand a beautiful book, Neither Crystal Nor Gold, The Transformation of the Crystal Cathedral into Christ Cathedral. This, of course, in the Diocese of Orange here in California. The author is Robert Artigo, and he joins us now by phone. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
That's correct. And we were on the show when we did Black and Pro-Life in America.
Yes. A little while
back, and, you know, being here in Sacramento together, but not being in the same room is kind of a little strange, but fine, we'll do it.
Well, hopefully you're wearing a mask right now, because it can transmit through the microphone.
They do say that, yes, and I'm wearing a, you know, ventilator and everything, so.
My wife says I look better with a mask, so, you know, there you go.
You know, you and me both.
I guess so. Well, tell it, you know, and there was a wonderful book about Walter Hoy. You know, what a hero he is, and the pro-life and Black in America. Wow, you know, I don't know why that's a rare combination, but it seems to be.
Yeah, I think it's been becoming more popular, and the nice thing is we're hearing a lot more voices out there in the, you know, voices in the wilderness, so to speak, that are out there joining Walter's chorus.
Yes, indeed. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, yeah, I'm a former reporter. You and I have a pretty similar background. I'm a former radio guy. I was in radio for 20 years. I came from military police in the U.S. Army, and was kind of a very early Army recruit. I started at age 17. Before that, I was doing mostly bicycle riding, believe it or not, rather than actually attending class.
Did you get paid for that?
Yes, I did. It wasn't much. It was enough to buy lunch, maybe.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
At least I got something out of it. Mostly, but it was a net loss for me. Mm-hmm. Good times, though. Good memories. And I went to the Bay Area and joined after a circuitous route, so to speak, but a very radio route into Gardnerville, Nevada, Reno, Sacramento, part-time in San Francisco, up to Seattle for a year, and then back to San Francisco full-time for about 14 years. And in that time, when I was in San Francisco, I saw my apartment getting smaller, my rent increasing further, and not really seeing a future where that was going to be any better anytime soon. Mm-hmm. There certainly weren't going to be any raises in radio coming. And I buckled down and I started to learn to write and really work on the craft of writing. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate towards the end of my run at the radio station in San Francisco, where I got in touch with the publisher Ignatius Press. They wanted me to write the book about Walter, and it was a miracle to me then, just like it's a miracle to me now, years on. Now this is my second book here, and I've penned a third one that is out there, and we'll see where that goes. But we have, you know, Neither Crystal Nor Gold is my second book, and I hope that it captures the imagination of the work of the Holy Spirit in the world the way Walter's book did.
Oh, very good. Well, it's a fascinating read. I remember, oh, man, years ago, I think my sisters, who had just become old enough to, you know, drive a car or something, took my mom. We all grew up in Davis and St. James Parish, but took my mom. I don't know. They went to Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm and went to the Crystal Cathedral. You know, Robert, and who hadn't heard of Robert Schuller and
right.
The Hour of Power and all that, and And I remember she came back and you know, full of stories, and she said, yeah, it was a really, really interesting place. And she said, charge me $8 to get in. And I went, what? I did. Well, I just like
I had not heard that.
No, I just you know how somebody's across the room and you're not looking directly at them, and I just almost threw my neck out of joint when I said, what? And she said, yeah, it was $8 to get in. And this is probably be like $20 today and or more.
Do you recall what year that was?
Oh man, I gotta say it probably was the early 80s, something like that.
So it was just after it had been it opened, because it opened in 1980.
Okay,
so
yeah, yeah, probably.
Years,
yeah,
he was there. Yeah, I think they were trying to make up for how much money they had spent to put that thing up.
He was pretty well known at the time, though. I mean, was he doing Hour of Power before he had the Crystal Cathedral?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Quite a while.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's probably.
Yeah, indoor outdoor sanctuary next door, where Archbishop Fulton Sheen appeared twice on the Hour of Power, at least twice, is what I know of. And you can actually watch videos of it on YouTube. But he comes on there and it does a really great sermon about the Virgin Mary at the Crystal Cathedral on the Hour of Power on Sunday. That says a lot about the way that Schuller felt about the church as a whole, the Christian community.
Yeah, you know, I mean, ecumenism is one thing, but the Blessed Mother, that's a sticking point, and especially years ago. I mean, I can remember having a good friend in college. I don't want to tell you how long ago that was, but that was like, you know, tell me about the Catholic Church, and you know, she was a Christian and you know, a firm believer and all the good and right things. She said, I just don't get your fascination with the Blessed Mother, or I don't even mean she said Blessed Mother, Mary, just Mary,
right.
You know. And I've heard that over the years as kind of a consistent theme. That just kind of stops me in my tracks, this Mary thing, you know. And you try to explain she's not deity, but by golly, she is the Mother of God. And we both believe that. What's wrong with a little bit of reverence here? But
right.
To hear that Sheen actually talked about Mary at the Crystal Cathedral tells you a lot about Schuller, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and Schuller's introduction to Sheen and the idea of preaching across the masses, really, and the way of presenting yourself when you're on a stage and on television came from Schuller's experience back in the 50s when he was starting his drive-in theater or drive-in rooftop sermons.
Right.
He was watching on television Fulton Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the stories I cover in the book is it tells a story about how as Schuller, the weekend Schuller was doing his very first sermon on the top of the snack bar, inexplicably getting to California from Iowa with $400 in his pocket and 2 weeks later getting his first church sermon going and then filling the parking lot.
Wow.
But anyway, Sheen's on television preaching. Schuller is impressed by that. In the Orange County Register, there is a news article that talks about two preachers that are famous for not needing any props, but just sitting there and engaging people the way Christ did, and Schuller himself used these words, the way Christ did on the Sermon on the Mount.
Mm-hmm.
Just preaching under the sky, which was Schuller's plan when he became when he conceived of the idea of having this glass full glass cathedral. But to have this, I hesitate to say, coincidence that they have this article about these two preachers, and the other one came from Schuller's own church, the Reformed Church of America, and his name escapes me at the moment, and it shouldn't because he's very well known from the 20th century as one of the great Christian orators. But Schuller and this other guy are in this article, and the article is about how preachers can get old and kind of fat and lazy, so to speak, and decide to lean on props when they get older. But these guys know how to do it right, okay? And then just the fact that here he is getting ready to do his first sermon, and there's an article in the Orange County Register just a few pages away from the picture of him standing next to his cross that he had built for his little outdoor sermon.
Well, you know, that word coincidence, and you say you use it hesitatingly. I remember, I think I read it in a book about Medjugorje, which is another issue altogether, and
have
to go there at all. But I remember reading the words, "With God there are no coincidences," and that has struck me and stuck with me for the longest time. Every time I hear somebody say, "Wow, well, you can't believe what just happened to me. This happened, and just like you described, what a coincidence!" And I smile and I repeat those words: "With God, there are no coincidences."
And certainly, you can sit there and think to yourself, "All right, well, under this one circumstance, it may be a coincidence."
Right.
But you put them in their totality among other coincidences, and you start to see a pattern. You go, "This can't be a coincidence." And so one of the analogies I use during this book, from Shuler's short history, or long history, I should say, Shuler's history of doing what he did, to the Diocese of Orange coming in and buying the campus, and then the restoration is the tapestry is woven from the back. And this is another Fulton Sheen concept, and I'm not sure where it came from, but I know he said it, is the tapestry is woven from the back. We see the stitching from the backside.
Hmm.
We never see the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
The tapestry is woven from the back, and we're each one of us, little stitches, and we see what God chooses for us to see. He's the one who knows. The master artist knows what's on the other side of that image. And when we get done with the book, we find that there's a massive tapestry that's hanging from the ceiling in the now Christ Cathedral.
So the early years, you know, the Shuler's early years is just fascinating to read. How do you research that? Where is this information? Did you channel him? I mean, come on.
There are plenty of books that you can choose from. Prayer, My Soul's Adventure with God was one of the early ones, mm-hmm. where he talks about his childhood and where he came from and how he said, "All right, look, we're going to do this one thing, and we're going to build something." And the people around him said, "We're not going to be able to do it. That's impossible." He goes, "Well, I'm the minister, and the CEO here is in this empty chair. Is not empty at all. It's Christ. He's sitting right here. He's in charge. It's him who is supposed to make that decision. Mm-hmm. All I'm doing is doing the job." And I remember, you know, there are other people in the Christian church throughout history who have made the same leaps of faith without knowing what it was going to lead to. He could never have known that the choice to spend some money to buy some building material, to build his little outdoor chapel on top of the snack bar,
mm-hmm.
the drive-in movie theater, would lead to the Crystal Cathedral, which he named a cathedral because he always wanted it to be a cathedral. And as God would have it, and again, I don't want to say for sure what God planned on doing and what he still plans on doing, but it becomes a cathedral with a cathedral, an actual chair for the bishop.
Mm-hmm. It's just I'm telling you, it's a fascinating read. It must have been fascinating to write.
It was, and it certainly was not something that I had planned on doing. I had written the book. We started the program talking about Walter Hoy.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to Southern California to meet Walter Hoy and a couple other people so that we can watch, with a bunch of other people, a preview of the movie Unplanned,
mm-hmm.
which was an early edit, actually. And to meet the producer, it was a very neat thing, and it was at the campus of Christ Cathedral. Well, I'm a Northern California guy. I was not in the loop. I knew, of course, of Shuler and the Crystal Cathedral, but I didn't know that there was a bankruptcy, that the Catholic Church had bought the campus. So when I drove around the corner following my map, you know, my Google Maps, listening to the turn left and go into the parking lot, and I see this shimmering spire in front of me, and it's the late afternoon, it's getting dark, but still the sunset is shimmering off the top of the spire, and I go, instantly knew this was the Crystal Cathedral. I said, this is, out loud, I think I said, this is the Crystal Cathedral. And I was blown away by that. So then somebody had explained to me what had happened. But then a couple of months later, I get a call, another kind of circuitous deal. Somebody says, hey, by the way, you might be getting a call pretty soon. I recommended you to write this book about Christ Cathedral. And I said, okay, what's that? And they go, well, it's the cathedral in Orange County. It was Crystal Cathedral. And they go, oh, it was just there. And I said, I can't tell you how much I want to do this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. And you have to have that kind of passion to write something. It's really hard to write when somebody says, you know, you should write a book about, you know, thus and so. And then you go, oh, yeah, maybe I would if I was interested in spending, you know, a year of my time doing something like that. But, you know, you say something about a church like that, and it just lit me on fire. And so we did a bunch of interviews, and, you know, I accepted this responsibility, and I was happy to do it because, again, you know, the title of the book, Neither Crystal Nor Gold,
right,
it's a play on the words from the book of Job,
mm-hmm,
which is the wisdom of God, which comes through the Holy Spirit, neither crystal nor gold, right? And then I'm walking around campus while I'm doing some book research, and there's a Job statue there after I had already chosen this title. And how many times have you seen a Job statue?
Yeah,
pretty much never.
Not often. I don't even imagine what it would look like. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Wow. So, you know, it's interesting that when I first heard about, you know, that they were gonna purchase this, I thought. That's can you do that? Do you know what I mean? Like, can you take the Crystal Cathedral and turn it into a Catholic cathedral? I mean, I figured if they did, they must be allowed to do that. But it just struck me as odd.
Struck a lot of people as odd. It was at first worries about, oh, we were talking about the ecumenical nature, mm-hmm, of it. Is it becomes, does it create a holy war type of environment in Orange County,
sure,
among Christians,
sure,
to do something like this iconic facility and turn it into a Catholic church where everybody, oh, it's just a Catholic church? Well, it doesn't stop there. There's plenty to go around when it comes to how do you get it done, because, first of all, there are two parts that I think were the biggest things, and that was that you had Crystal Cathedral Ministries and its school. All of this was much smaller than it used to be in terms of staff and,
mm-hmm,
and caretakers at the facility. They had to move to another place. So in order for the Catholic Church to buy it, they had to give them a place and a place for what we called a soft landing.
Mm-hmm.
And that soft landing was St. Callistus, the parish just down the street.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to uproot two families, two parishes, essentially two Christian families that,
mm-hmm,
had occupied a space for a very long time and loved their space. In fact, Callistus only built their church in the year 2000. So they had put a lot of effort into it. A lot of people were married there. People were baptized there,
sure,
already. And those people had to uproot and move to the other campus. And Crystal Cathedral Ministries, with grandson Bobby Shuler at the helm, had to move to the other facility. But there wasn't any other choice. It would not have gone any other way. As it turns out, it really looks like, in hindsight, that if the Catholic Church hadn't purchased the property, it would have been sold off parcel by parcel, probably, in some fire sale, which would have been disastrous for this iconic facility. Even if people tried to protect it eventually, it probably would have fallen. Now, the other part, of course, is how do you take a large glass structure, which is a 90-foot ceiling, angular, shaped like a kind of like a four-point star,
mm-hmm,
and turn that into a Catholic church, a cathedral where the body of Christ can be celebrated.
Right.
Like communion, right, is celebrated there. The centerpiece of the Mass is celebrated there. How do you do that in a place that was a glass soundstage,
mm-hmm,
that was really quite comfortable, quite uncomfortable and hot? And if you look at the old videos of the Hour of Power in the Crystal Cathedral, people are wearing sunglasses. You know, they're there.
Yeah.
it's a pretty tough place. And it's echoey. The sound isn't very good, and oftentimes you couldn't hear what Shuler was saying when you were inside.
Mm-hmm.
This was about the television audience because it was a massive worldwide.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, ministry with millions of dollars of people. You know, millions of dollars coming from all these people from around the world.
In his own way, spellbinding. You know, sometimes you'd be clicking through looking for an NFL game as a kid. You know, and here would be Shuler, and you'd be going, whoa, who is this?
Yeah, I had the very same experience. And so that's why I knew, like everybody else, something about Shuler, right? And I knew who this minister was, and I knew how powerful he was when he got up there and spoke and did his sermons. I listened. I did. And, you know, I was a Catholic, just like you.
Yeah.
And so we grow up with a different concept of things. So we hear a guy, we have a first chapter in the book. It's called Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
Not Ruby Rinker. Ruby is one of the first people to go see Shuler at the drive-in theater. She had a Midwest, her religion in the Midwest was Christian, but it was really kind of the Footloose movie type of, you know, no dancing, you have to wear very long clothes, you have to be a very demure attitude, or you go straight to hell type of thing. And
mm-hmm.
she was really turned off on that. When she went to the coast to be just a kind of a girl who hung out in coffee shops and near the surf and hang out with surfers and that sort of thing. But she goes over there and she hears Shuler talking about God's love, that
mm-hmm.
God loves you. And so do I. Keep coming back type of thing. And so that turned her on. She became a Catholic. Lots of people that I spoke to were first brought back to the Christian faith or reintroduced mm-hmm. to a passion or had a different concept of their Christian faith because of Shuler, and then migrated either back to their original faith, which was Catholic, or found their way
mm-hmm.
to the Catholic Church, right?
Yeah, frequently, and not just Shuler, but frequently, that's the first step. I can't tell you how many times I've interviewed prominent Catholics or just quote-unquote ordinary Catholics. I don't like that word, ordinary. Maybe I should capitalize it because ordinary Catholics are the salt of the earth. But where their conversion story, whether they were non-believers of any kind, almost always, in many cases, did not start with the Catholic Church. Started with a Christian church, but not the Catholic Church. And then, like you say, they found their way. It was like, well, wait a minute. Who wrote this Bible? Who are these guys? Who are these apostles? Well, what happened? Who was the next generation? And the next, that was the church Christ founded, the Catholic Church? I guess it was. You know, why aren't I in that church?
And there's a lesson in the book when we talk about it towards the end, when we're really filling in, how did they convert that soundstage to this mm-hmm. sanctuary of the Catholic Church? A real Catholic cathedral. And you walk through the process of all these different aspects, of which all built, they're all rooted and centered in history and in reverence for the original Christian faith
mm-hmm.
and the history of the church. And so you see how it comes together. You want to have that cruciform church as best you can there because of the design. It was difficult. And then you had the Catholics, the bishop's doors, and you wanted to be able to process in, and you wanted to make sure that it was cool in there, that you could relax and that you had air conditioning and that people could experience the Mass without distraction. And it was difficult. But it was a process that it's a beautiful process, it's edifying, and it's also not just a historical regurgitation of something. There are stories in here about people's experiences and how they learned that something was important for the church. There was an important piece of art that came about through channels. The guy who was doing most of the design work of making sure that everything was the Catholic Church way
mm-hmm.
as he went through the process. He had done research, and he found a piece of art, and he brought it in. And then as he continued to do research, there was, in a way, they found out, I'm not exactly sure how it was they found out, but they found out that some centuries ago, or a century ago, it was stolen art.
Hmm.
So they ended up having to return it. And they were like, well, we didn't know what the history of it was until we got it here. So they returned it. So that was unfortunate, but it was one of those stories. And there are many like it, whether it's Schuller stories or the stories that take place during the bankruptcy, which had a very, you know, obviously an unknown outcome as people sort of bought, you know, they're getting through this and biting their nails, and finally it came out that the church was buying the cathedral, and then you go on to, what do we do now that we have it? So be careful what you wish for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that you have the campus, what are you going to do? And it was a great deal of work, but it was a work of passion, and the people who were involved, many of them not only volunteered years of their time, and a great deal of effort while they were working full-time at other jobs, major developers, like people who build skyscrapers. And they're like, oh, you need a couple million dollars? Here's $1 million. You know, their own money. I mean, they really put their own money as well as their time and their hearts into it because they wanted that place, that center of Catholic life for Orange County, that Bishop Brown, who was the bishop at the time of the purchase, wanted. When he first became bishop, you know, in the year 2000, he thought, this is what I was called here to do, was to get a real cathedral for a very large diocese of the Catholic Church. And who would have known that would have even been possible? It was not possible until the day somebody walked up to him and said, or at least in a meeting, a couple people said, you know what? This is happening. Maybe we ought to put in a bid.
Wow.
So again, the tapestry is woven from the back. How do you see that coming? You don't.
You don't.
And I didn't see the book coming any more than the people in the diocese saw what would come out of it. And then, let me finish with one more thing.
Yeah.
The dedication of Christ Cathedral, after completion and everything, the only thing that wasn't operating was this beautiful organ, the second largest one in North America. So that's still sitting to the side. It's still waiting. But they do the dedication. They have the big mass and everything else. Then COVID hits. Okay? And they wanted a place during a crisis that could be a center of the Catholic Church for Orange County. And you had, what did you have on campus? You had EWTN, you had the ability to broadcast, you had a state-of-the-art church that had the ability to stream mass like no other facility that I could imagine. Perfectly clear, beautiful streaming masses, and the ability to accommodate a huge audience that was tuning in via streaming services because they couldn't leave their houses. And it was a lifesaver in that way. I mean, you have Bishop Van, who is the bishop now, standing there over the host, praying, and nobody else in there except a few other priests, maybe, and a few other nuns, but nobody else in this whole facility. But then you have a vast audience that was home worried. I'm actually kind of feeling emotional about this because here they were worried, lonely, praying for, you know, praying to the Savior of the world to help them, to support them, to bring them the peace that he had promised, and they got comforted by that, all because that facility was there. Had it not been there, who knows?
Who knows? Yep, that's very, very, very well put. That's a great question. Who knows? Indeed. Now, but before everything got, I mean, the T's are crossed. I don't know if the I's were dotted yet, and then. Didn't the Vatican kind of put the brakes on it for a while?
There's something called a neo-obstat.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a big permission document. They got the Crystal Cathedral sale approved by the bankruptcy judge, the federal judge.
Right.
And there comes a time where all of a sudden they find out this is not, can't happen. The Vatican didn't approve this. They have to approve any sale. the Vatican has the right to approve the sale, or purchase, I should say, not the sale, but the purchase of a property that is of in excess of $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, this is, you can't do this. And it required several people to jump through some hoops very quickly. And
it's a bankruptcy judge scratching his head and looking at canon law.
Yeah, and they don't. The Vatican doesn't do stuff quickly.
Right.
It's just, it's well known that the Vatican doesn't do things very quickly. And shockingly, the Vatican approved it right away. Now, there's a connection between Schuller and the Vatican, which makes that moment even more interesting, because Schuller, in the late 70s, had some drawings of what the Crystal Cathedral was going to look like. And he went to Rome. Imagine this.
Wow.
He's famous now because he'd already been doing the Hour of Power at the indoor-outdoor sanctuary that was, that is still there, but next to the Crystal Cathedral. And he, a worldwide known person, goes to the Vatican. He's not Catholic. And he walks up there and says, I want to see the Pope to have him bless my little drawings of my cathedral here that I'm building.
That's amazing.
Literally, there was a person who, he confessed to this, and then he confessed to this, and then he died immediately, almost. But he said that I actively thwarted Schuller. He was like the media guy. He was clergy. He was I don't remember the name, his name either, but he was an important figure, and he dealt with the media. And one of the things he did was he made sure that Schuller could not meet Pope John Paul II and get that picture taken. And yet there is a picture of Schuller and the Pope, and the Pope did indeed bless those pictures of the drawings of the Crystal Cathedral. And so now the Catholic Church has a connection to him decades earlier that nobody would have seen. How could you have imagined that? I mean, that they would, well, and then it would become a cathedral, because he named it a cathedral, like I said before, so that one day it would be a cathedral.
And as you note, many years later, Pope Francis, the Holy Father prays that the cathedral may serve as a tangible sign of our Lord Jesus Christ's presence in your midst and help deepen your missionary witness to the broader community and lead souls to an experience of his abiding mercy and divine light. That was from Pope Francis at the dedication of the cathedral. But he was not at the dedication, but one day maybe he will be.
It would be a beautiful thing. There was I don't think there is a more lively location for the Catholic Church, although there's, you know, there's beautiful places all up and down the state. It's a cathedral of immense proportions, and there's a large cemetery there. There's a statuary. There's a statue garden.
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff was built by Schuller. And when talk about some of the conflicts that were going on, as they were saying, some important people that were buried there were like, well, if the Catholics take over, we're moving the bodies.
Right.
And the Catholic Church said, well, if you want to do that, the bishop said, I guarantee you, if you want to do that, we will pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out nobody did.
Wow.
Because the bishop made sure that that was a non-denominational cemetery, mm-hmm. that you could have your own service in there. And the chapel in the sky that's on the top of the 13-story building there, that they call that the chapel in the sky. It's got a 360-degree view of Orange County from there. It's a beautiful little chapel. That's also non-denominational, so you can go up there. I think it's to call it non-denominational might be a little bit of a stretch, because it's a Christian chapel,
right,
so
right.
You wouldn't have a non-Christian event going on there. But you could be Protestant, you could be Catholic,
sure.
You could be, you know, any other you choose. But they want the bishop. It was very important to the bishop, who was very strongly in support of the ecumenical nature and responsibilities of the bishop, to make sure that he accommodated what Schuller wanted, So when you walk in there, you walk into the cemetery, you see Schuller and his wife buried to the left. And then on the right, you see the Creams, Mr. and Mrs. Cream. Mrs. Cream had said she was going to move Mr. Cream's body, but mm-hmm. yet there he is, prominently located there. Why? Because they're at the length, I can't say it now, but anyway, their money, their money went into making sure that the Crystal Cathedral was built, and they obviously felt like it was a place of honor to live, and I think it's a beautiful place, and when people go there to visit, they see a multi-ethnic parish, which is the St. Callistus, which no longer exists. That parish is on campus. So those people are, many of them are Vietnamese. They're Spanish, or I should say they're Mexican. Many of them are Mexicans, but a lot of them speak Spanish. But they have all these different services with all these different languages and all these different faces and styles and people. And I think it's a place like no other. And then people still show up there on campus who were Hour of Power people or people who were followers of Schuller and followers of the proteges of Schuller from Korea, for example. You might see a busload of Koreans get off a bus, tour the campus, and hear their minister talk about how he learned something from Schuller. In their local language.
And, of course, our bishop, Bishop Jaime Soto, is a native of Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure he knows all about the Crystal Cathedral as he was growing up there.
Yeah, it would be interesting to find out if he had been there during that time because Father Smith, Christopher Smith, who was now the rector there, I think, if he's still... I'm not sure what his title is right now, but he's the primary priest over there who handles a lot of the services. And he grew up just down the street, and he said they used to go over and stand next to, his parents had like a fruit stand just down the street from there. They'd sell fruit. Mm-hmm. And so they would go up and sit next to the wall of the drive-in theater and say, look at this preacher on the roof of this snack bar. This is crazy. But they have a lot. There's a lot of stories like that because a lot of the people who were involved in this grew up in the area, and they would never have thought that they would have grown up and seen Schuller's, his history, his ancestry, interwoven into this tapestry that is the Catholic Church of Orange County, the way that it is. And I hope that when people get neither crystal nor gold and pick it up and read through it, that they get a glimpse of what it must have been like for Schuller to stand there wondering, all right, what is this future going to be like as the orange blossoms mm-hmm. are feeding his nostrils and his senses and the warm sun is coming down on him in a way that you would never get in Iowa. And I think as you go through the process of following, how did this happen? And you can't help but see now God is showing, and I hope he does, through this, I hope that was the purpose of this, through this book, that you might see the tapestry that at least up to this point in history was what, the ultimate artist, God, had wanted to present to everybody.
The book is Neither Crystal Nor Gold, The Transformation of the Crystal Cathedral into Christ Cathedral, of course, the cathedral for the Diocese of Orange in Southern California. The author is Robert Artico, and it's published by Lighthouse Catholic Publishing, and it's just a wonderful book. I highly recommend it. There are a lot of people further up the food chain than I am that are also highly, highily recommending it, so... Robert, we'd love to get you back to talk about your third book. We're against the clock right now, but God's blessings to you and your family, and thanks so much for this wonderful, fascinating book.
Thank you, Bob. I do appreciate it so much.
Take care.
Take care.
That's Robert Artico, and it's a really fascinating, fascinating book. Bishop Todd Brown, the Bishop Emeritus of the Diocese of Orange, this book is an invaluable testimonial to the story of Christ's Cathedral. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour. right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Yasmin Castellanos from the Catholic School Department, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks for that. Appreciate it very much. And welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us today on the Bishop's Hour. And we're pleased to be joined by phone by Blake Young, the president and CEO of Catholic Food Bank and Family Services. Blake, always good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice, Bob. Thanks.
Yeah, so much happening, but you got some good news.
Well, so far, right? Well,
yeah.
We are moving forward and preparing for our Run to Feed the Hungry. As folks know, that we have to take a break because of the pandemic, and it looks like for now, for all planning purposes, that we are going to move forward with an in-person event, and we'll just have to adjust if the world changes around us. But we're super excited. It is such a wonderful event, wonderful opportunity to engage with our community, and it brings in a good amount of revenue for us to be able to provide our program. So we're excited.
Did I say Catholic Food Bank?
It is,
but I, in deference to your many, many volunteers and people that participate who are not Catholics, Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services.
Yep.
Yeah, but Sacramento is kind of a Catholic word anyway.
Yeah. Well, we're just excited. I mean, if we can pull this off, if we can keep the community safe, and so far, we're being told we have a green light. So, you know, people can obviously virtually participate in the event, and they still get their shirt. And so, you know, we had a very successful virtual event last year. And I think, you know, most of the listeners here and most of the community members felt strongly that they wanted to continue supporting us, even though we couldn't have an in-person event, understanding that we turned that money. As you know, $1 into 5 meals, that's a lot of meals. So so it's just really critical that we have this event. And I'm just thrilled that so far it looks like we're going to be able to do it.
Blake, tell us what went into was there a push pull and you know, 6 people in favor and 5 against, or what all went into making the sausage, if you will?
Well, so we're just simply unfortunately we're at the whim of the public health department and,
sure,
and what locally the jurisdiction's going to approve or not approve. So,
right.
I suspect that if things get worse, that they'll probably modify that. But, you know, for now, they're allowing outdoor events, and we'll just kind of, you know, I'd rather prepare now to have an in-person event, and if we have to pull back because of concern, that we will. But, you know, it's kind of a unique situation because, you know, people can sign up and still support us. We just wouldn't physically be there. But I'll tell you, given that's all that's happened in the last 18 months, I hope that we can all come together and celebrate together because, gosh, it is, it's been a sure been a difficult year and a half.
Yeah, and you know, you put your finger on it. Let's plan optimistically. It reminds me, my daughter just graduated from high school, and in February or March, the school district announced that the graduation for the second straight year would be virtual. And my daughter just—I had no idea. What was the most important thing about her senior year? It was graduating in person, and I hadn't realized that. Maybe because another sister had the virtual, you know, the year before, and it was like it was more important than prom or getting good grades or what college she got. It was like we really want to walk. We want to walk into the stadium, and she got a petition together to the school district saying, why don't we be optimists? Why don't we plan, yes, we're going to do it in person because June is really a long ways away and we're just now starting the vaccine and all that. And then if we have to modify it or go back, that's easy to do. And by golly, she won the day. And I'm pleased. And they all walked and had a great graduation. Of course, that was early June when things had, we thought this was in the rearview mirror. But I'm so pleased that you folks are, being optimists and, you know, planning. I mean, we're still, it's still almost 3 months away, almost exactly. And you know, a lot can happen either way, as we've seen in that. But you're right, it's been a long 18 months. So when you want to have an event like this, do you actually have to formally go to the county and say, the county health department, say, this is what we want to do? And then either they can give an up or a down, but that maybe they give you some guidelines or modifications. How does that work?
Well, I mean, the guidelines for this sort of activity is already out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're not asking permission. We get permits through the city, et cetera. We work with the police department. We work with the ambulances, the fire department. But you know, the county, along with the CDC, will put out guidelines for these sorts of things. So we just need to stay up on it. Now, more than likely, 30 days before the event, we're going to roll up our sleeves and really have some rich discussion with, you know, people saying, okay, hey, what's mm-hmm. going on? I suspect that we will publicly hear things as we come into fall. And if they start some major restrictions, then we're going to have to make a decision there pretty quickly. But no, we're optimistic. I mean, and that, you know, why not? I mean, right now, you know, people are able to do those activities. And I understand it's a large gathering. So, I mean, I mean obviously, we're going to make a decision what's best for the community. But right now, we have it's all systems go. So, I mean, we're going to act like we're going to have the event and be positive about it and promote it as such. And mm-hmm. if we have to pull back later on, then we will. But, boy, that'll be disappointing.
Yeah, indeed. And yet, you know, most of the large gatherings that we've heard of where it was pretty obvious there was some super spreading going on were indoors. They were not outdoor events.
Yeah, I'm not going to claim to be an expert, but gosh darn it, we've done a lot of major activities, including our big mega drive-through distributions, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, you can pull off these events fairly mm-hmm. Clean and successful, but you know we're just going to be smart about it, and if the community along with the CDC and the public health department feel that it's not a good idea, and you know, and we may get pressure from the public at some point to say, hey, what are you doing here? But we're going to hold off. You know, we're going to get through summer. We're going into September, so I suspect, you know, sometime early October we'll kind of, you know, evaluate the situation
as it stands and make some decisions. But you know, I'm gonna be relentless on promoting this thing and just encourage folks, because this is a personal decision. There may be people that say, you know what, good for you, do your event, but I'm not going to do it this year just because I'm a little bit cautious. Well, we're going to encourage you to be a virtual participant.
Right.
We'll mail you your shirt, and you can still support the organization. And my hope is remember, Bob, we said this the year before. My hope is that the following year we'll be able to do it.
Right. Well, and you've offered this option to people who maybe we're going to be out of town on Thanksgiving. You've offered that option for years, you know, to so it's not anything new. And
and
you may have the same people who just for some reason they can't do it. Aunt Mary's visiting, and you know,
yep.
but and, or they may be, like you say, they may be hesitant for a variety of reasons. And it's a wonderful option, and it's great to know that last year's event was another successful event. It wasn't the same, but it was another very successful event, and you know, helped you to meet some goals.
Yeah, I you know, this has become Sacramento's tradition. It's not just Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. It is. I think there's a lot of pride in the community to do this event. I think the event takes place in a beautiful neighborhood. I think it's very community orientated. So, and I just think that it's a family tradition. I obviously been with the organization a long time and grown up basically here, but I see that now we're seeing grandparents and their kids and their kids' kids doing it. And now their kids' kids are having babies and doing it. And so it's become quite an event, and you know, the blessings are that, you know, we get to talk about, you know, the work and correlate it to this fun event, to helping feed hungry people, and you know helping understand, you know, helping create an understanding that there's a lot of people in our community that are suffering and have a difficult time, and you know, they can use Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services as a conduit to get help to folks.
A critical question: have you designed the T-shirt yet?
yeah. It should be on our website. Yeah, we did. We went live with our registration August 3rd, so you can register now at either runtofeedthehungry.com or sacramentofoodbank.org. The you will be able to see the T-shirt and the volunteer, et cetera, and the team shirt. So. Yeah, we're full steam ahead. All that's up on the website, and you know, we're just hoping that folks get excited about, you know, the event. And if we have to turn it virtual, then you know, we'll do that. But we are all systems go.
That's great news. There's so many events that are sort of on hold, you know, and that's kind of been the way it's been for 18 months. It's nice to at least have this on the schedule as something we can count on, and then if circumstances change, well, that's life. That's, you know, that happens. But it's much better than having it, oh well, we don't know yet, you know, and
right.
And then people do start making other plans.
So. Yes, calling all folks right now, do not make any plans, please, or unless you're going to be a virtual.
Save the date. Unless you're going to be virtual, then you can be virtual. That's from right. Anywhere.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, we have people. Believe it or not, we had some from Australia. We had some from the Far East. We had a few from Europe. It was pretty fascinating.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Well, yeah. Blake, always a joy to talk with you. Thanks for all you do. And we're just going to say our prayers and keep our fingers crossed, and just hope for great things on Thanksgiving Day of 2021.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bob. Looking forward to speaking to you over the holidays and in the advance. Really appreciate your time.
Very good. God bless. Thanks so much.
Okay, God bless you.
That's Blake Young, the president and CEO of the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, Countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Inside of me, I feel your spirit is moving around me. I hear your voice, you're calling me closer. I know that you're here. I
And now